You're listening to a Dwell Community Church production. If you'd like to check out more resources, visit dwellcc.org.
We're in Jeremiah. We've been studying this topic of Jeremiah. And the way the very long prophetic book is laid out is not chronologically, in other words, the sequence of events, but rather thematically. And so the first couple of chapters kind of lay the foundation where we're introduced to Jeremiah and his moment in time, which is a very dangerous time for God's people as the Babylonian army in 605 BC has won a decisive victory over the combined forces of Assyria and Egypt. And now they're moving south toward Jerusalem to lay siege to it. And God in that time has raised up Jeremiah to speak God's word to a people who have grown deaf to God's calling to them. And he's warning them that far more dangerous than the power of the Babylonian army is the unbelief in your own heart. And so that's been basically the trajectory that Jeremiah has been on all this time, warning people of what is to come, only to be met with complete disinterest and even hostility toward Jeremiah. And so, as Jeremiah is sort of prosecuting his case against God's people in chapters 2 through 7, a new section opens up to us in chapters 8 through 20, which are very deeply personal, and they're called laments. There is a set of seven lament sections here in which Jeremiah, who is kind of taking the brunt of people's opposition to God as they've rejected him as well and the horse he rode in on, is now turning his pain, his concerns, his worries, his anxieties, all these things to God. And he's disputing with God in prayer in ways that are nakedly honest and I think quite powerful. I want us to understand as we begin to move into this section, and we'll spend a couple of weeks on it, that God is not afraid of our questions. He's not afraid of our doubts. If you don't have some level of doubt, I wonder, are you taking the claims of Christ seriously? If we live in a world that we allow that world to affect us, I wonder how could we not live with a certain degree of fear, of anger, of feeling alone, all of these things, and that those questions ultimately kind of get directed back to God. And so this morning, I just want to invite your concerns, your suspicions, your doubts, the things that inevitably plague the hearts of people who are trying to make sense of the world in the face of God. Look what the prophet asks. Has God abandoned us? Why am I in constant danger? I'm supposed to be your prophet. Why am I in danger? Why does my own family want to kill me? Why do the evil prosper and those who stand with God suffer? Is God a deceiver with empty promises? Ouch. Where is God? Why am I in this pit? And of course, the old, why was I ever born? So if there is in some way, somehow, you can relate to something here, then this section of Jeremiah really is for you. And I have to say, just as a personal note, that my faith from the very beginning and in an ongoing way in the almost 45 years, since I'm more than 45 years now that I've known Christ, has always been a labored faith. A faith where I've had to wrestle through concerns that I have about my relationship with God and what he's doing in my life. And while they don't look quite as stark as what Jeremiah has laid out here, they're nonetheless real. And I suspect that if you allow yourself some of those same kind of fears and suspicions, questions and doubts are part of your heart as well. The sweet thing about Jeremiah is that he knew God enough and trusted him enough to bring to him his heart as broken and as confused as it was. And so we're talking about this species of literature called lament. And lament is just this crying out to God. And I'm calling it kind of as a semicolon, lament, faith, seeking understanding. Lament in itself is not an act of defiance towards God. It's an invitation to connect with God and to work out a process in our own hearts to hear from God in a fresh way in the context of those things that are deeply troubling to us. So let's begin in chapter 15, verse 10, with the first of the two complaints that we want to examine here this morning. Woe to me, he says, my mother, that you have borne me. Oh, that I had died at birth. I'm hated everywhere I go. I just see Eeyore on his back going down the stream. Why was I ever born? You know, this kind of thing. But for Jeremiah, it was a pretty serious question because of the opposition that was mounting against him. And so this first thing that he's asking, why was I ever born, given that I've been brought into this world, the very purpose of my being called by God is being rejected by the people, and it just seems that there's this futility that is about my life. My life is supposed to be to represent a God who nobody wants to hear from. And so kind of like the ancient character Sisyphus in Greek mythology, it's like I'm pushing this boulder up a hill only to come to the crest of the hill and for the boulder to roll back down to the bottom again. And so back I go and pushing it up until it crests the top and then rolls back down again. And forever it just seems like arduous, difficult work to no obvious end at all. It just seems pretty futile. And so with that in mind, the Lord replies to him and says, okay, let's talk about this futility, Jeremiah. And maybe some of us can relate to Jeremiah's sense of futility. Maybe we've been working at things in our lives for a long time, people that we love and care about, and who just don't seem to respond at all to the hope that we're trying to bring to them in Christ. Maybe we're up against really difficult life circumstances with our health or with our economic life or with relationships that don't seem to get healed over a period of time. And we find ourselves in this place where we're just sort of despairing because it seems like everything that we do is futile. Nothing is really advancing the program. And so we're stuck. And God's like, okay, let's talk about this being stuck thing. He says, I will take care of you, Jeremiah. Your enemies will ask you to plead on their behalf in times of trouble and distress. So in this way, God is comforting Jeremiah really in a couple of ways. First, there is this promise of future vindication. It's true, Jeremiah, that your experience to this point has not been very positive. It's true that while people have been fairly comfortable before this invasion that is going to happen, and they're not listening to you, it's very uncomfortable for you. But in time, that is going to change. And that sense of hostility and resistance that people have against God and directed toward you will be softened by the reality of life's circumstances and life situations. And so he's really just telling him, you know, there a time is going to come where the thing is going to change. And I feel like that's really an important message for us, for many of us who are laboring, for instance, in long-term relationships with people that we've really tried to share as authentically as we know what Christ is about and what he's done in our life, only to be met with a lot of, you know, arms distance kind of, you know, disinterest. But, you know, what the thing is that time erodes that kind of hostility and antagonism and resistance. Because as we get older, we begin to realize the important nature of the questions raised by the Christian message of Christ, you know, the idea that we can be reconciled to God, that there is hope beyond this life. That becomes important, you know, as the scalp line begins to recede, the hair begins to get a little grayer. You know, the realities of life are that way. We just, last Thursday, we met with a group of friends in their 60s and early 70s, kind of like where we are, and a small handful of us were hosted this
Bible study from the Gospel of John with a number of people who have been far from God for their whole life. And it was remarkable to me that those very people who had been so outspokenly hostile to the things of God, now at this age, as they're kind of looking back, wondering what was it all about, and looking to the future, wondering what's next, all of a sudden they're interested. They've got ears to hear. And I just want to suggest to you that this message that God gives to Jeremiah is just so relevant to us today. We are, I think, in a moment in our time culturally, and a lot of people in terms of their age, where the things of God are just not on their radar screen. They're not interested. They're gonna move ahead with their understanding of things, however incomplete they may be, because they're content, they're satisfied, and they feel a sense of security. And that will persist as long as some of those conditions remain. But for everyone, there comes that point where the body begins to give out, where the questions cannot be suppressed any longer, where we really need a sense that we've got to have answers to these questions in our life. And so God is telling Jeremiah, take heart. That day is coming, and it will, and we'll see later in our study when that happens. But it's also happening in the lives of people in your orbit as well, your neighbors, your friends, family members, and so forth. So take that to heart. There is a future in which what you're saying is going to make sense. Then secondly, he says in verse 12, can a man break a bar of iron from the north or a bar of bronze? Strange statement, but what he's doing is he's bringing him back to what he said to him at the very beginning of his work. God's reminding Jeremiah, remember when I first called you to be a prophet, I said some things to you then that now I want to remind you of because they are so important to the kinds of fears and anxieties that you're expressing now. He told him in chapter 1, verse 18, I've made you today as a fortified city, as a pillar of iron, and as walls of bronze. What is he saying? He's saying basically to Jeremiah, hey man, you are made of sterner stuff. You don't know how tough you are. It's never really been tested before. Now it's being tested. And I'm just telling you, I've given you what it takes to succeed here in this moment, to stand in and to be the person that I've called you to be. And I think, again, that this is something that applies to all of God's people. We may feel like that we're just not up for the task that's before us, but the reality is that God has shaped us and molded us in a way and placed us in space and time for the purposes that he has called us to, and he's made us, through his Spirit, more than adequate to the challenges that we face. Years ago, in a home church, we were breeding like rabbits. In 1 year, 7 live births. It was going on. It was pretty fun. And it was just such a lively and sweet time, we thought, still think, kind of look at that time as a revolution of the Spirit in our lives. And one of the children born in that window was a little boy who had a problem in his brain where too much water was collecting around his brain and it was pressing in on his brain. It's really a serious condition. So they had to do emergency surgery on him, put a tube in, and this is a problem that persisted for many years. And so his mom, who was about 5 feet tall and maybe weighed 100 pounds wet, and was really a very fearful and unassuming person, just found that need because of the love that she had for her son to be his advocate, to intervene with doctors saying, you know, you got to be on the task. This is what's going on. You need to see my son. She, a number of times, really saved his life through her advocacy. She was with him in his classroom from kindergarten all the way through the end of elementary school. And, you know, just to think of this person doing what she did has always kind of inspired me because she just didn't look like that kind of gal. And yet, the times demanded it of her, and God gave what she needed to make it, to live in that moment. And so for you as well, and for me, you know, there are things that are difficult for us, that are weighing on us perhaps heavily in an important way. We feel like we're not a match for the circumstance, but God is able to make us this way. And he's reminding Jeremiah that whatever circumstance you're in, I'm in that moment with you, and I have made you, and you are able to make progress, to make an investment, to be there and to be the kind of person that you need to be in this moment. And I, again, take real comfort from the fact that on the one hand, Jeremiah is able to cast his great fears and deep insecurities before God, but then he's also willing to hear from God and to really take in this information. It's a dialogue, and lament is a two-way street. We pour our hearts out to God, but then we wait to hear from God. And this is what God has said to Jeremiah. Now, in chapter 15, verse 18, here's a second complaint. Why has my pain been perpetual and my wound incurable? And it's this perpetual thing. I feel rejected. I am in danger. I'm not respected. No one's listening to me. The people that I feel like I ought to be able to rely upon really are my enemies, are actually conspiring to take my life. No one's listening, God. And it's so hard to be out there speaking your word to an audience that just doesn't care. And nothing can take that pain away. And so he's just slinking through life like this. This is why we call Jeremiah the weeping prophet. Because he's really all about this period of deep rejection, not only of God, but of him as well as a spokesperson for God. So that's the thing. And then he wants to elaborate, just in case you don't understand God. It's like this. When I discovered your words, I devoured them. They were my joy and my heart's delight. You know, that's sweet to hear from the living God. It is amazing that through his word, we are able to enter into the counsel of heaven, to think the thoughts of God. There is just an incredible, brilliant privilege that we have to hear from God. And he says, that was my delight. My heart just leapt by the awareness that I'm not just reading the words of men, but I'm reading the thoughts of God. The thing that really matters, the answer to the big questions, I'm hearing, not because I'm so wise and I figured it out, but I'm hearing from you, God, the truth of these things that we all seek. And then he says in verse 17, I never joined the people in their merry feasts. I sat alone because your hand was on me. I was filled with indignation at their sins. So what is he saying? He's saying basically this is totally unfair. Look, I delight in what you've had to say, and I have delighted to communicate those words to the people that you've called me to. But this is not something that I bargained for. This idea of just being rejected and cast aside, eating my lunch alone, you know, in the cafeteria, stuff like that, while everyone else is having fun, there I am kind of as the outcast. That is the thing that he is kind of caught in the middle of. On the one hand, the rightness of what I'm hearing, the beauty of what I'm hearing, and on the other hand, the effect that this is having on the people around him, which is that they are becoming increasingly hostile toward me. And so the question in my mind is, what holds this complaint together? What is the common thread? Well, five times it is, I. That is the thing that holds this thing together. That the focus of Jeremiah
is on I've discovered, I've devoured, I've never joined in, I sat alone, I was filled with indignation. The sights are set completely on himself, and that setting sights totally on self really has set Jeremiah up for a very difficult and, I want to say, dangerous circumstance in which he goes from an unchecked complaint to a full-blown controversy with God. Now he's blaming God. Let's think about this. Verse 18, second part. He says, "Will you indeed be to me like a deceptive stream with water that is unreliable?" Whoa. That is a heavy accusation to God. He's saying, "God, you deceived me." And what is happening here? It's like, God, you are a mirage. Imagine this. This is the Middle East, right? So it's arid. Rain only comes in certain times of the year. And in other times of the year, there are these mirages. You know what that's like, driving down a highway in the summer, right? Where in the distance, it looks like there's water on the road because, you know, the heat is bouncing off of the surface and it kind of looks like ripples of water. And you think, oh, at last, you know, there's water. But you get closer and the image gets further and further away. And you just realize at a certain point, this is an illusion. God, your words are to me a mirage. It's false hope that you've given to me. And so anger for him has turned to resentment. And his disappointment to this unresolved bitterness towards God. And now he's got a real dispute with God. His lament, his crying out to God, has gone a step further into this accusation towards God. And let me just suggest to you at this moment that our friend Jeremiah is in danger. Does God want to hear from us our doubts, our concerns, our fears, our confusion? Absolutely. Absolutely. But there's something in our hearts that we also must watch, and which we see in real time happening with Jeremiah here, which is that he's sort of crossed a line from expressing anger and disappointment into making accusations about the character of God. And so, for instance, he's thinking to himself, I shouldn't have to suffer for everyone else's failures. You know, I've kept my nose clean. I've delighted in your word. I've stayed away from all the riffraff and this type of thing. And yet, problems are coming my way. Well, what is he really saying? He's saying God is unjust, right? It's not fair. God is not treating me according to what I deserve. Ooh. Be careful when you hear yourself saying that. You know what I mean? Second, God is either unable or unwilling to protect me. Which translated means God is not all powerful or he's not all loving. And so this is what can happen in our hearts, is that we take the pain that we're experiencing and we direct it to God as the cause, the source. It's his problem. And I think it's really important for us, something that many of us, I think, have learned over the years and we need to continue learning, is that we need to ask ourselves, what do our complaints, our dissatisfactions say about God? Is there implicitly an accusation that we are making to God as we complain about our lives? So, for instance, in my experience, in my life, I'm kid number 3. So I don't know how many people are kind of like in that third slot, but the reality is that my older brother and sister were always smarter,
more capable, more accomplished, more, more, more. So number three comes along. My mom actually acknowledged this later in life. She said, yeah, I think we had to realize that your dad and I were two child parents of four kids. So that when three came along, it's like, we don't know how to do zone defense. But what that cultivated in me was a sense of envy, really jealousy towards my brother and sister. How come I didn't have, you know, the intellect that they had, the creativity that they had, and stuff like that? And just really kind of denigrated the person that God had made me. And that there's a habit of the heart that develops within people where you gonna just begin to look at life through that lens of envy, of jealousy, of competitiveness, or whatever it might be. And ultimately, at the end of the day, what are we really saying? What we're really saying is, God, you really screwed up when you put me there. That's not the temperament I would have chosen for me, the personality I would have chosen for me, the assets in life to deal with life that I would have chosen for me. And so these become places where we just get stuck and say, this is your problem, God. And that's just not going to go anywhere. When we are stuck in kind of a perpetual loop of negativity, of judgmentalism, of bitterness, where we cannot forgive and cannot reconcile, where we just kind of burn through relationships and keep everyone at a distance. What are we saying here? What we're saying here is that we are not the person that God intended to be. Or that there's something so broken about us that we can't be expected to live like everyone else. And so that ultimately, at the end of the day, this unfairness is ultimately God's unfairness to me. And so there's a bitterness, a chip on the shoulder that people can take through life and beyond. Examine your own responses to life theologically. And ask if what you are thinking, the values that you hold, the responses to life that you have, if they were a commentary about God, what would they really say? And that will kind of get us to the nub of the issue, the heart of the matter. God begins to engage Jeremiah on this point. This is how the Lord responds. No? Surprisingly not. He meets him with four R's. He says, first of all, the big picture is restoration. Jeremiah, I understand the path that you're on. And there is a way for you to resolve this issue that is going on in your heart in relation to me. And so that's important. That's a word of hope and promise. God is not offended. God is not scandalized by Jeremiah. Jeremiah is in the wrong. He's making these accusations toward the living God. Okay? But God is not done with that. He's not offended by it or surprised by it in any way. And he's saying, okay, this is where you are. I've seen this before. Remember Job? He was there. Remember Elijah? He was there. You know, all of these great characters of the Old Testament, you know, the one thing that holds several of them together is that they all pled with God to die. It's just so unfair and so unjust. I just want to check out. And so God's like, okay, problem. Let's look about how to resolve this thing. Let's look about what does it mean to restore you. And so he begins by saying, if you return to me. And so now God is calling out to Jeremiah, who is holding this harsh accusation towards God. And he's saying, hey man, you are walking away from me. You're showing me your back. If this is going to change for you, if you're going to experience real resolution to this thing, which you don't have to have. You don't have to have this resolve. You can go through the rest of your life a bitter, angry mess. That is your distorted, twisted freedom of choice. You can live that way. Or you can stop and not show me your back, but show me your face and return to me. See, accusation is a matter of the heart. What Jeremiah is saying to God is that he knows God's motives. He's able to discern that what has happened to him is completely unfair, should never happen to a so-called righteous person, and that therefore God must have some sort of a defect in his own character, otherwise this kind of thing would never happen. And God is like, no. See, when you start making accusations, you're judging the other person's motives. And we just have to be really careful when we go to that place and we think that we can determine, based upon what's happening circumstantially, that we know internally what is motivating the activity of another person, even if that other person is God. Do we have enough humility to stop and say, I'm not in a position to know what's driving your motivations? And that places us then in this where we have to say, do I trust this God that I have known all along and in so many contexts where he has been faithful to me? And so that we are ending up not just listening to that tape of complaints, but we are speaking to ourselves about those complaints and about the track record, as it were, that God has established through history and in my own life. Second, these accusations presume that we know all that there is to know. Right? So, yes, a lot of pain in this moment, a lot of a sense of futility for Jeremiah. He's being rejected, treated unfairly. All that's true. But to then draw the conclusion that this is somehow God's fault, or that it falls outside of the scope of his care and concern, that it falls outside the scope of his plan, both for Jeremiah and for his people, that presumes a level of knowledge that Jeremiah simply doesn't have. And nor do you or me. And so it's really important that we're able to come before God with our confusion, with our anger, with our fear, with our doubts, yes, and ask, Lord, open my mind, open my eyes to the wider lens that is this circumstance. Many years ago, when my wife Linda and I lived in Chicago, we used to go to the Chicago Art Institute because we were poor and it was free. And it was beautiful too. But there is an experience that people who have been there recognize, which is that you walk up the staircase to the second floor, the Impressionist floor. And on your left, as you get to the top of the stair, is this mural, and it's a huge mural. It's bigger than that, what's that called? Screen, thank you. And you're right up in front of it, and it just looks like a bunch of irrational colors all thrown together. It's called pointillism. Okay? And you're like, unimpressed. It looks like, you know, a catastrophe happened in a paint factory. Then you take a few steps back. And what happens is all those dots of paint, they begin to take focus and take shape, until finally, at about 20 feet, you realize, I'm in the presence of a masterpiece. I was not able up front, up close, right there, to see it. But in taking those steps back, Sunday afternoon on the island of La Grande Jatte is beautiful. And so it is, this is important for your life and for mine, that we not get lost in the immediacy of the moment, but that we have the discipline to step back and engage with God about what is this big picture, the bigger picture. What are you doing in my life? What have you been doing in my life? What about your plan for my life and for history as a whole? And that is a game changer. That's where accusation turns into inquiry. Now we're interested. We're not denying the pain that we feel, but we have the humility to ask for context. You see what I'm saying? And so, God brings Jeremiah to the place where finally he can understand what's wrong in the hearts of the people that God has called him to. And which is namely that he's got the same problem. Their hearts lived out in living color before him with all its grossness is not categorically different from his own. Ouch. Right? That the people that we are deeply offended by so often are not so different than ourselves. When I was 19, I was coming off of a many-year anger trip toward a guy who was abusive, who was an alcoholic, who was deeply mentally not well, and who I lived with because he was my father. And there was a lot of information there to point that accusatory finger. You're why this, that, and the other thing, right? But it took a long period of time and a lot of anger and a lot of failure on my part to be brought to a place where I had to admit truly before God that I'm no better than my father. That all of the things that I find about him to be offensive are just as true of me. The only difference is that he had the nobility at my age to be fighting in a world war, and all I'm doing is just taking. And it was a super humbling and transformative moment in my life. And I think that that's where we really begin to understand the grace of God, all of us. When we begin to realize the problem's not out there, right, in some nameless world. The problem is in here. Whatever it is that I'm seeing is the problem out there, I see it in here. Paul puts it this way in Romans chapter 2, verse 1. He says, in that you judge another, you condemn yourself. I got a problem. And so, through this, we realize, you know, God hasn't gone anywhere. He's there with Jeremiah. He's calling on him to return. He is able to cause Jeremiah to remember the things that he has promised in the past to give him the context to understand what's happening in the present. And what is that context? The full expression of God's justice, God's power, and God's love remain in Jeremiah's future. Jeremiah gets glimpses of it, as we saw last week from Jeremiah 3. We're going to see it again in chapter 23 and in chapter 30 through 33. These incredible insights into what God is going to do with the broken human condition. And Jeremiah is going to have a front row seat in hearing from God. That story. Amazing. But what we need to understand is that God has given us enough to trust him, to respond to him, to have his presence be real and transformative in our life, knowing that there is a future coming when all of these daubs of paint fit together into the mosaic, which is God's plan for humanity. Sweet. Now, second, He calls on him to return. He promises that, he says, if you extract the precious from the worthless, you'll be my spokesman. This is the extracting there is a word for refining. It's how we assay minerals, things like that. But what he's really saying is, dude, here's the deal. You need to be changed. Just saying. You're not where you could be. Not where you need to be. We put it like this in the people that we're interacting with. We say, I'm not now the person I need to be if I'm going to finish in this life well. Do you agree with that? I'm not now, today, the person I need to be to finish this life well and pleasing to God. I've got room to grow. And so did Jeremiah. Oswald Sanders puts it like this. He says, it is very possible that there is an obstruction which is hindering the communication of God's power. Before it will flow, the obstruction must be removed. There is, in other words, a giant sock stuck in your vacuum cleaner hose. Okay? That we want to be that vessel of God's power working in us and through us, and there's just something in there, and it's gumming up the works. And so it makes us feel inadequate, ineffective, and far from God. And God's like, I've got a remedy for that. You may not like it. It's called being refined. It's called feeling pressure. It's called being broken or sifted. Jesus promises Peter that he will be sifted like wheat, but I've prayed for you. Paul says in 2 Corinthians 4 that we are like jars of clay with the light shining inwardly that was only manifested when the outward person is broken and shattered so that inner person who we've become in Christ can be made evident. We need to be changed. We need brokenness. We need to realize that the things that we have relied upon in our life are inadequate to carry us forward. And we need to be broken of our dependence on ourself and learn what does it mean then to trust God. And so God is simply telling Jeremiah, the story's not over. But here's the thing. This is the crossroads in your life. Will you have the humility to return? And will you allow me to show that broken and hurtful way within so that we can begin a different trajectory for your life? And that is really what this is about. It's about being free and transformed. See, Jeremiah is stuck in this place of being the victim of all these things around him, which are real. I don't want to diminish that. But if that's the end of the story, we're all lost. And the triumph of God is that he triumphs in our adversity for our good and for his glory. And what does that look like? It means a movement within that is where we begin to have grace replace our sense of judgment. Why? Because we're seeing more about ourselves. We're able to be less critical of others and more in tune with, in touch with, the goodness and the gracious mercy of God in Jesus Christ. Are you more understanding today of the weaknesses and faults of others or increasingly intolerant? That's going to tell you a little bit about this assaying process. Where gratitude replaces anger. Anger says, I'm not getting what I need. Gratitude says, I've been given sufficiently. Have you been given sufficiently? Start there. Let your heart sink into that reality before you worry about the deficits of what you don't have. Joy comes to replace resentment. I realize that today is a gift from God, not something to wake up in anger about. That the goodness of God is reflected throughout my day, even if I just had the eyes to see his grace and his generosity toward me. And that ultimately hope replaces cynicism. return, refined. There's a resilience. He says, then you'll be a fortified wall of bronze. It's the second time he's brought this up in this passage and the third time in the book so far. There's a resilience that comes from really learning to not rely on self and to really trust in the provision of God in our life. A stability there, a resolve to continue in the things of God. Why? Because we've experienced him and are able to endure things that maybe a month or a year or a decade ago we were unable to handle. But now we can. Sweet. Progress. A confidence that we had that God is able to bring us through these difficult circumstances. He's got that power that I was wondering about and the mercy that I was critical of. And that there is an endurance and a patience that has come to shape my character. I had that relaxed feel about life that I didn't have before. And then lastly, there is just this notion of rest. Look what he says. The text goes from the I of Jeremiah, the all about himself, to hearing from God, I am with you. It's not the first time he's told that to Jeremiah. He continues to reassure Jeremiah in this way. I'm with you today just like I was with you before, and I'll be with you in the future as well. I'm with you. What more do you need than to know that the loving author of the moral universe, the omnipotent creator, is with you? He says, I will deliver you. That's a promise that he gives to Jeremiah. And then he says, and I'll redeem you. That's right. I'll take this, what appears to be a defeat, and turn it into victory. I'll redeem you. It'll make sense out of your life. And so, my friends, this is a lament. This is what God intends for us. He wants us to have the honesty that Jeremiah had, to approach God with these deep concerns, but the humility that Jeremiah had to listen to God's answer. And that's really where we are. I feel like the way forward in the life of everyone who knows God is this. It's what we're describing right here. Lord, thank you that you are available to us in our despair, in our questions, in our confusion, in our anger, in our doubts. But those things are not the end of the story, that also you speak to those things with such clarity. We thank you for the example of godly people who've gone before us, like Jeremiah, who've been willing and able to put it all out there before you, but then to be humble enough to be changed by you. And I just ask for all of us here this morning, Lord, that we would have that ability just to come before you in that same way and to agree with you that we are a work in progress, that the orange barrels around us are not going away, that we are a work in progress, and that we would turn to you, Lord, with the same sort of heart attitude that God was calling Jeremiah to return to you, to allow your spirit to refine us so that we could have that kind of restoration and hope that comes with it. So just thank you so much for this fellowship and for the opportunity to come together before your word, knowing that your spirit will place on each of our hearts and minds just what we need to hear individually, each one of us, about what does it look like to take that next step of faith with you. And so we thank you for these things in Christ's name. Amen.
Thanks for listening. This has been a Dwell Community Church production.